Hello, welcome to the Hashimoto's Connection. Have you heard of Hashimoto's remission? Does it seem unobtainable? Well, today's guest, Heather Creekmore, shares her personal Hashimoto's story and some of the lessons she has learned along the way that she believes brought healing. Listen in to hear her inspiring, cheerful story of how Heather has found joy in her journey. Sandy Robinson. I'm a wife, mother, health coach, personal trainer, personal fitness chef, and entrepreneur. Through my own personal challenges with being diagnosed with Hashimoto's, I discovered the dire need for a better support system. Join me as I bridge the information and communication gap between patients, caregivers, family members, friends, and coworkers through helpful tips, inspiring stories, and motivating interviews. I call this the Hashimoto's Connection. I had no idea how cool you were until I started doing I was first interested in your Hashimoto story, but then I'm like, oh my goodness, you have like all these cool things you're doing. And I already bought your book.
Oh,
I've already
awesome.
Listened to some of your podcasts. And in my women's group, we have what we call DNA, where okay. We meet every week and with a couple ladies from church. And I think we're going to go through your book together just because awesome. It's fun. Yeah.
Yay. How good. Good. I love that.
Yeah. So tell me a little bit about yourself. Where are you from? And tell us like what you do.
So I am an East Coast native who turned Texan. Let's see here. I think we're going on 14 years now. Wow. So I don't know if Texas will let me claim it or not. You know, they're kind of picky about you being born here, but no, we live outside of Austin, and I am a pastor's wife, a mom of four. I homeschool, and I was homeschooling before COVID made it cool or necessary, however you want to deem it. My background is actually in politics and marketing and fundraising. And I had to take a step away from that when I had four babies in 4 years. And God just opened doors for me to start writing a couple years ago. And so I guess I'm an author and a speaker and a podcaster and all the things in that so genre. Cool. So it's good. I've been blessed to have some neat opportunities in that arena.
That's great. I love Texas. I lived there for a short time.
Okay.
Round Rock and Austin.
Oh yeah. You're favorite. Right beside me. Yep.
Okay. Yeah. I loved it there. I'm in Alabama now, so it's very different, but we're in Huntsville, so it's not that far off. It's pretty similar to Austin.
Yeah, I've heard good things about Huntsville.
So I wanted to hear your Hashimoto's story. When did you find out you had Hashimoto's? What did that look like?
Yeah. So it's funny because that's the intro to my my second book, The Burden of Better. I talk about that meeting with my doctor where she told me, so I guess a couple years before that, I was 38, 39, and I had gone in and did the standard thing I think most women do it. I don't know. I did it. I was like, hey, it's harder to lose weight than it used to be. Is there something going on? And so they tested my thyroid and they said it was okay. And they offered me, the meds if I wanted it to help me lose weight. And I was like, no, I'm not going to do that. I'm not going on thyroid medication for weight loss. Right. And, that's a non-starter. But then I guess it was 2 years later, I had just turned 40 and they got my numbers back from my routine blood work. And I had, the TPOAB showing that I had Hashimoto's. And that was 2 weeks, I think, before my husband and I were going on our 10-year anniversary trip to Italy. And my conversation with my doctor was, yes, you really need to be gluten-free. And I'm like, no, I am headed to Italy in 14 days. Like, can't my thyroid just tough it out for a couple more weeks? Yeah. And she's like, no, you really need to be gluten-free. I was like, okay. So that was kind of the start of my journey. My husband was awesome. And in solidarity, he was like, I'll be gluten-free with you. And I'm like, but wow. it was an incredible experience, Sandy, because in Italy, having allergic reactions or anything, any gluten problems, celiac really is recognized as like a national disability. And so like there are requirements on restaurants, like to tell you whether or not they have gluten-free options, like drugstores carry gluten-free food, like going to Italy gluten-free is really not a bad deal at all. And I had the best gluten-free pasta, the best gluten-free everything over there. So it wasn't all that bad, but that was kind of how my journey began with, oh, this is a bummer. This is going to ruin my life.
Yeah. I want to move to Italy now though. That's awesome.
Seriously. Wow. I think there's even some sort of like subsidy. If you can't like afford your gluten-free foods, they'll help you or something along those lines. Wow. So they really do cater to those who have to, you know, watch gluten.
That's awesome. I definitely want to go now. I'm excited to go travel. Okay. So when you got back, what was life like? What did you have to do after that? What were some of the changes that you found you had to make based on your root causes?
Yeah. So, you know, my stories I tell in my books and on my podcast, I was a serial dieter. And I really believe that actually contributed to my thyroid issues and ultimately my Hashimoto's. And even now, as I talk to women, as I go speak, I have so many women come up to me and say, I have the same story you did. I started dieting in elementary school and middle school. And guess what? I have the same prognosis you have now. I have Hashimoto's, or I have thyroid issues. And so I knew how to diet. I was really good at dieting. And so at first it was, okay, well, here's my new diet, you know, and I'd gone off carbs before, right? Like I tried everything. So it's like, okay, no more gluten. You know, it's no big deal. I just make up all these rules for myself. But the interesting thing I think was starting to figure out that, and this was a process for me. This wasn't like, you know, within the first year, even I can't say that I really, you know, it all came clearly to me. No, this is a process of starting to figure out, oh, wait a second here. Like, this is my life, right? This is not like a diet I'm going to go on for 3 months and then go back to quote unquote normal, right? This has got to be a new way of life. And so what does that look like for me mentally to process that, right? Like, oh, wow. Like I don't get to eat brownies in 3 months when the program's done, or they're going to have to be gluten-free. Although I think gluten-free brownies are awesome. So that's an aside, so that was a challenge. And then starting to recognize, and it was really through some reading that I did, the connection with my adrenals. And so I mentioned earlier, the ice rink in politics. I love to work. I could work all the time around the clock. And I'm kind of a sprinter, right? Like I can work for like 6 weeks straight and then I just crash. And that's just the way I've operated since I was in my probably even in my teens. Wow. And starting to read things about Hashimoto's and the connection to adrenal issues, mm-hmm. and recognizing, so I was a fitness instructor. That kind of is part of my story of body image issues. Actually, I became a fitness instructor because I was pretty sure that if I was up in front of the class, that I wouldn't think inside my head that I wasn't good enough. It didn't actually work that way, but that's what I thought would happen. And so I would work out hard. You know, I would sometimes teach 2 classes a day. But the older I got, and the really just in conjunction with my Hashimoto's, I started to recognize that exercising hard was exhausting me. I mean, I would teach a 6 a.m. spin class and I would take a nap as soon as I got home. I'd get home, shower. I'd be napping from 7:15 to 8:15. By 11, I would need another nap. And by 3, I would need another nap. And I was in bed like dead at 9 p.m. And so it started to occur to me that maybe it wasn't normal to need 3 naps a day after teaching 1 class. And so I had to really back off what I was doing fitness wise, which again was another one of those paradigm shifters, right? Because I relied on, in my like economy of weight loss and body image, I was relying on that 600 calorie burn, you know, four mornings a week to balance out everything else. And, you know, that was a crushing blow to go from spinning to I can walk around my neighborhood. That's it. You know, so processing all of that, but really, so this, my Hashimoto's diagnosis was right after I turned 40. And, I'm having a hard time remembering how old I am. I think I just turned 47. So this has been like a 7-year journey. And I would say really just the last couple of years, have I actually been in a place where I'm able to be kinder to my body? Like I would say in the beginning, I was kind of angry with my body. Like, why are you doing this to me? This is not how I want you to operate. Like, I want to keep going like we did when we were 25. And I want that metabolism. I want that energy. I want all those things. And what can I do, body, to beat you into submission so you go back to being that way? And really just over the last couple of years, recognizing, oh, no, wait, that's not going to happen. So what can I do to get a grip on it, right? And to cope with it and be kind to my body and help it heal has really been the way my journey has looked the last couple of years.
That's great. It is very traumatic to go through the diagnosis, just like it would be for any other health condition when all of a sudden you realize everything's different now and you don't really know what that looks like. So it's hard to even know how to prepare. So going through that journey and having to kind of mourn the loss of what life, what you thought it was going to be or what it was, all of those things, you have to go through that mourning process. And then it's time to regroup and you get a new game plan and you move forward. And I would say the thing that I see the most in that is a lot of people don't know that part. They don't know how to develop the game plan to get past the mourning part. Yeah. And so sharing your story and sharing other people's stories like this to be able to teach them how to move past the mourning, the sadness of the loss of what you thought grief. Life was supposed to be. And so I love that you have embraced it. That's great because that's really what you have to do. We are not in control of our bodies like we think we are. And just learning to enjoy the process, enjoy making healthy choices, enjoy the ways that we have to change things and just make the best of it can make all the difference in the world. That you focus on the good in it and not the fact that you're missing out on other things, right?
Absolutely.
So when you have a flare up now, what does a flare up look like for you?
Yeah. So I feel it immediately in my thyroid. Actually, I get swelling where I can feel like, oh boy, do other people notice that? So I feel a big knot there. And then just exhaustion. I don't know if you're familiar, I'm sure you are, with Isabella Wentz and the root cause. And so part of my root cause is actually strep. Epstein-Barr virus related in there. And I have really high levels of strep in my body, like crazy high levels. Like I'm not good with numbers. I should never be a mathematician, but like if normal is 200, I have 2000. It's that out of range. Wow. And so I had my tonsils removed at 43 because my functional doctor thought that would help get some of the strep out of my body. And it did. But so with the strep, when that strep, it's really stress. When stress flares up, my strep and my Epstein-Barr and my Hashimoto's, they just all have a party and I am exhausted. I will get the chills. Like I have a fever. I will think that I am like coming down with something and go to bed thinking I'm sick and wake up the next morning and be like, oh, okay, I'm fine now for the most part, you know, maybe still tired, but not sick with any kind of viral anything, but just, you know, it was just my body saying, okay, that's enough, Heather. Yeah. It's time to rest. So that's pretty much what it looks like for me now.
Okay. Have you found any other treatments with Epstein-Barr? I actually just did an episode on that where 95% of adults have the Epstein-Barr virus and how each of us responds to it is slightly different, but it just lays there dormant possibly for some, and then others just waiting to be activated at that moment of stress, kind of like what you talked about. And, you know, there's no technical cure. When I did research, I found that they have some treatments that some people have responded well to, but there's really no known cure for it.
Right.
What have you found to, besides the tonsils, is there any other method you found to reduce those numbers?
No. So, you know, so my backstory there, I guess most people get Epstein-Barr in the form of mono when they're young, as a kid, maybe even as a baby, before they know, you know, before they can tell their parents that their throat hurts or whatever. Right. I didn't get it until I was 25. And so having mono at 25 is... it's a thing. Right? Yeah, it was a really challenging period. I mean, I had a full-time job and I could not go to work because it was too dangerous for my spleen, that sort of thing. And so I believe that getting mono so late, like having Epstein-Barr activated so late and maybe even introduced into my system so late, is probably what's made it harder for me. And so there were some courses of antibiotics that my doctor had recommended, but I was on antibiotics all through college. Just ridiculous things for body image stuff, which is what I write about now. But my uncle was a doctor and he prescribed me antibiotics and they would keep my skin clear. And so I took antibiotics every day and had clear skin. And now I know that really was not the best thing to do for my body. But so I shy away from antibiotic solutions right now, like unless there's something I really have to fight, but I didn't want to go on a course for a year or more. I take olive leaf extract from Seagate, which is a natural antiviral. And I do feel like that's helped my numbers some by taking that consistently. But now, aside from that, I haven't really found any Epstein-Barr, except for avoiding stress, right? Like stress just seems to make everything flare up. And stress management is really difficult.
It is. And even good stress. That was something else that I learned in this journey is, you know, you can have holidays where it's good stress. You're having parties, you're doing fun things, but it can still wear you down the same way bad stress does. So keeping mindful of that to not trigger those things like the Epstein-Barr virus and Hashimoto's.
Yeah. Wow. I love that.
So if you were to look at your average day, what are your average week? What are your top three personal care? Like nothing compromises these personal care items. What would those be for you?
You know, I need to exercise in some way. And when I don't have the ability to do that, like my stress gets out of control. And so it's taking a couple walks a week. I just started using the infrared sauna, going to HotWorks, which is an infrared sauna gym kind of situation. And the infrared sauna, I think, has done a lot of good for my Hashimoto's. And I read an article recently saying, no, you don't want to sweat to detox if you have Hashimoto's. So I know there's various, you know, opinions on that. But for me personally, I think that that's been really helpful. I have to read my Bible every day. I can tell if I don't do that. And so, you know, the personal time is good for me every single day. That's a routine that I have. You know, just having time to connect with other people, I think, is another important priority for me, whether it's sometimes I take a walk with my husband or us just having, you know, a weekly date night or just even a half an hour to sit down and regroup together. That really helps me as well to just kind of connect and feel sane.
Yeah, that's great. As far as how you eat, do you feel like gluten-free it works for you, or do you have to omit other food groups? What has been successful for you?
Yeah. So Sandy, that's been a journey for me, right? Because as soon as I was diagnosed, it's like, you know, you put into Google, you know, how do I eat for Hashimoto's, best diet for Hashimoto's, like all those things. And so I did a number of the different, you know, protocols, if you will. I tried many of them. And really where I've come to just personally is that I've got a friend that's an integrative nutrition coach, and this is her line. So I'm just stealing shamelessly from her, but a body that's stressed will not digest is her line. Mm-hmm. And I have found that for me, when I am super stressed over diet, I am not doing well. Like there's repercussions to that. And so gradually and I can't emphasize enough how like slowly this process has been, because giving up on, you know, years and years of dieting parenting has been hard, right? But I would say just, you know, the last several years, switching to more intuitive eating, knowing that, okay, yeah, gluten's probably not my best friend, but if I'm somewhere and, you know, there's a dessert and I can have a couple bites of it, it's not going to kill me. And so I've tried to be freer, even with the gluten. I will say I'm gluten-free, but for the most part I am, but I'm also just trying to honor my body more. And I feel like the more I am honoring to my body, listening to hunger cues, eating what I'm hungry for, paying attention to whether or not I'm full or hungry, and cutting out all that I learned about, you know, well, try to go 12 hours without eating, you know, all of those things, that's fine for some people. That works great for some people. But for my body, I've recognized that that's just not going to work for me anymore. That puts my body in a state of stress. It puts pressure and stress on my adrenals and whacks everything out. So I'm much better off just kind of listening to my body and not really following any particular food protocol.
That's great. It's great that you've gotten results that way. And it really is different for everybody. Some people, if they eat even something slightly cross-contaminated with gluten, they have a huge reaction. Yeah. And then others, I know if I eat it, my blood work goes crazy, but I physically actually don't feel any different when I eat it. So it's actually hard, because if I am contaminated, like if I go to a restaurant and I ask for gluten-free and they give me something with gluten in it, I actually don't know the difference unless I can maybe taste it, but it shows up later in blood work, and, you know, I can test it and see. There have been times when COVID hit, I gave up the gluten-free. I'm like, you know what? I am tired of this. I want pizza. I want a real pizza, and I'm going to eat it right now. So pizza, cheeseburger, and fried chicken. Those were the three things I went off plan, and I did not regret it one bit.
I was baking sourdough bread. I'm like, surely sourdough doesn't have as much gluten as the regulars.
I mean, sometimes you just got to survive. So that's what I did.
And, you know, and I think that that's honoring to your body, right? Like, you know, to just honor the fact that your body is in a state of stress and it's asking for comfort. I mean, we have like demonized emotional eating for decades, but, you know, our bodies were meant to experience emotion. And if you can get a little comfort from a slice of pizza, now I'm not saying that should be your coping mechanism every day, every hour, right? That's unhealthy. But, you know, but to honor that every once in a while, I don't think there's anything wrong with that.
Yeah, that's great. Well, we have listeners that are from all walks. We have listeners that are brand new. They just got diagnosed and they're freaking out right now. Yeah. Then we have family members and friends that have the family member freaking out and they just want to show support.
Yeah.
What are words of wisdom you would give, first of all, to the brand new person? They just got a diagnosis and their head is spinning with information. What would you give for them?
Yeah. You know, I would just encourage you that there are so many worse things to be diagnosed with, right? Like, this is not the end of anything, right? This is just the beginning. You're going to have to make some changes, but it's going to be okay. I would just encourage you to take some deep cleansing breaths and live. If you are in, you know, information overload, like nothing has to be changed or done tomorrow. You know, I mean, if you are bedfast, right? If you're in a hurt locker, yeah, okay, there's maybe some more urgency to your situation. I get that. But putting additional stress on yourself by trying to figure it all out in a day or a week, it's just adding to the load that you don't need to. So I would say just take it one day at a time. If there's changes you need to make, don't try to change everything at once. Change one thing and change that for a week or so, and then change something else after you get used to the one thing you changed. You don't have to do a complete overhaul of your life in 24 hours. Well, you know, we all know that doesn't work, right? We try to do that, but we know that doesn't work. So, and I'd encourage you, you know, my last blood work, my Hashimoto's was not there anymore. They never fully tell you are cured, right? They just say you're in remission. But you know, I would just encourage anyone listening that this is not a life sentence, right? You can feel some freedom again, and you can you can live with this. It's going to be okay.
What about their family members, their friends that are trying to show them support? What can they do to encourage or motivate?
Yeah. I mean, I think the biggest encouragement is just to help your family member, your friend with the stress management, right? I think that I am convinced that stress is one of the biggest variables with this disease. So as you see them struggling with stress, maybe it's not even the stress related to the diagnosis, but, you know, family stress, managing kids, like think about ways you can be intentional to help them with that stress. If you're a spouse, if it's, you know, your spouse has been diagnosed, hey, what can you do to take some of the load off of your spouse that's just being diagnosed? You know, if your family member, can you take the kids for a night and let them go do something they find enjoyable? Just look for ways to intentionally help them manage stress. I think that would be a really supportive thing to do.
Yes. Good advice. And then last, I like to always offer up resources. You mentioned Isabella Wentz, and yes, most people, she's just a fabulous resource. I use her resources all the time. Do you have any other resources in addition to that, that you would recommend that you've found helpful along your journey?
Oh goodness. I saw this question and I was like, there are so many, but, and I feel like, and this is just my personality, I feel like I've taken like little bits and pieces from various places and kind of molded it together to what fits me. You know, I like Dr. Axe. I love his protein powders and his collagen powder. Like that has become a part of my diet since my diagnosis is drinking his collagen powder or collagen protein powders. I think they taste good. And so, he has some thyroid stuff. His book, Eat Dirt, talks about the different kinds of leaky guts. And I think that was kind of part of my, I don't know, healing journey as well, to heal that aspect, my leaky gut issues. So yeah, I like his stuff as well.
Great. I'll have to check that out. Very good.
Special thanks to Heather for sharing her story today. If you'd like to find her online, check out her website at comparedtowho.me, where you can learn all about Heather's book, her podcast, her journeys as a pastor's wife and homeschooling mother of four, and her failed Netflix baker experience on episode 1 of Nailed It. She also offers body image coaching and online courses as well. Well, that's all for today. If you feel overwhelmed or stuck, I'd love to help you with one-on-one coaching sessions to help you navigate the ups and downs of your own Hashimoto's journey. Schedule a free consultation with me directly through my website at coachsandyrobinson.com or through Instagram at coachsandyrobinson. Also, don't forget to join our new Facebook group called the Hashimoto's Connection for special discounts on courses, members first announcements, and meet the guests that we interview on the show. Thank you for listening today. I hope you feel empowered and encouraged with what you've learned. If you like this episode, please show your support by sharing this podcast with friends and leaving a 5-star review. Until next time, thanks for listening to the Hashimoto's Connection.